Welcome to Total Engagement with me, Matt Coon, a wrestling fan just like you. And we're just talking here, brought to you on the MLW Radio Network. And of course, partnered with our friends over there at WrestleZone.com. Not only the world's most widely read internet news website, but also the home of some pretty nice guys that work over there. And it's Total Engagement, our weekly episode. As I broke last week, starting StarCast Weekend, which is just in a couple weeks. I can't believe it's coming up. Starting StarCast Weekend, we're going to be every single day. But until then, you're going to have to just go with these weekly shows. Only a couple left, because I am working hard at my music camps. And it's come to my attention that maybe one or two, probably just one, student has discovered my podcast. And as I told you, don't listen to the podcast. Don't. You know who you are. Just turn it off. Get on YouTube or something. Practice your guitar. And don't listen to the podcast. But for the rest of you, I want to welcome you to Total Engagement. What are we going to talk about today? Well, we're going to talk about what I think is the best kept secret in wrestling. But it's not really that much of a secret anymore. But it kind of is too. We're going to talk about that. And it is an organization that is making some headway, that is disturbing the entire scene. And you might not have heard of them, but you probably should. We're also going to talk about Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy, people hate Orange Cassidy. People love Orange Cassidy. I talked about how much I enjoyed him a bit ago. We're going to examine why people hate Orange Cassidy. And maybe that it just means that you hate yourself. And we're going to talk about Roman Reigns and Buddy Murphy. What a fucking match. What a great match. I actually took time to watch it with my son as well. I said, you got to see this match, because he was working. He's got a job now. This is my life. My son's old enough to have a job. And watch the match with him. But I have a take about it. So thank you again for joining us this week on Total Engagement, brought to you by PodcastSuperstar.com, where you can pick up some amazing shirts brought to you by What For Apparel. Whether you're a Matt Coon guy, or whether you want to say FMK, or whether you just want to represent being just a fan, over at PodcastSuperstar.com. It is Total Engagement with me, Matt Coon. The other night, as soon as the Buddy Murphy Roman Reigns match was over, I tweeted, wow, that was the best main roster match I've seen in a long time. And I meant it. Not just SmackDown or Raw or TV, but really any main roster match. Of course, people talk about the TakeOver matches. They're fantastic. I don't want to go down that hole. Let's just say best main roster match in a while. And why? Because you had Buddy Murphy, who had his first SmackDown match after being drafted or whatever the hell it was to SmackDown months ago, finally has a match as a result of this angle that some people are calling an accident. Some people are disputing that. Finally having a match against Roman Reigns, and Roman gave him so much offense, but also had a credible match as well from his side. They both looked great. Roman took the win, and in a lot of ways, it was a star-making turn by Buddy Murphy, or was it? First, let's look at the match. The match was interesting because Buddy Murphy is really the only kind of New Japan-style wrestler in WWE. Now, I know there's guys who are from New Japan. I know there's, so don't be like, fucking Shinsuke Nakamura, shut up. I know, okay? But Buddy Murphy is really, doesn't wrestle a WWE style at all. He wrestles really a New Japan style. The kicks, the moves, the transitions, the psychology, even Shinsuke and AJ and those guys, the OC, they have transitioned their style quite a bit. Buddy Murphy is pretty much a devotee, and he was kind of, I think, allowed to be that way because he's on 205 Live, and no one fucking watches 205 Live. Definitely not Vince. Meanwhile, you know, we're watching on pay-per-views. We're like, well, this guy's good, but a lot of people don't give 205 a chance because there's so much wrestling on. In any case, he used that style against the king of WWE style, besides Randy Orton, who is Roman Reigns, and Roman gave him a lot of offense. He took some V-triggers. He took, I don't know the name of it. My son knows the name of all these moves. But, you know, where he grabs the wrist and knees him in the face. And a lot of really cool spots. And including a huge flying fist, what do they call, Superman punch, where he jumps off the steps, Roman does, and then the spear where Buddy Murphy did the backflip bump off the spear. It was fantastic. It went about 13 minutes, and it was a star-making turn, except how, why they fucked it up, but let me tell you how they fucked it up. I think if you saw SmackDown, you know. It wasn't but an hour later or less than an hour later where Buddy Murphy looked like a little bitch. Character-wise, Buddy Murphy looks like a pretty tough guy. I'm not calling Buddy Murphy a bitch. But the character of Buddy Murphy was kind of played out for a little bitch when Rowan and Daniel Bryan threw him against the wall and made him lie or made him tell the truth, but basically punked him out. In any situation, it can be interpreted like he got punked out. So this guy was super strong, held his own, looked like he belonged, was really great in the ring, and had some innovative offense, and really barely lost to Roman Reigns. But he got punked out. And that tells you a couple things. Number one, it tells you they probably don't have long-term plans for Buddy Murphy. They might go through the motions a little bit. They might have a Chad Gable-type little push or a Shelton Benjamin-type little push. But that, to me, indicates they don't think that much of Buddy Murphy. But also, it's indicative to me that the people who were involved in the match, whoever the agents were, Roman, Buddy Murphy, whoever was involved in that match, was not really involved in that backstage segment because it wasn't congruous. It wasn't like it was in the same family. It literally was like it was a different TV show. So I think maybe the people involved in the match, you know, had a lot of autonomy to create their own situation, but it was juxtaposed completely by what happened backstage. It was that kind of inconsistency where someone needs to look at the sheet. I don't know how they reconcile the matches with the angles, but in that case, it wasn't done. If you're going to treat Buddy Murphy like that, fuck that great match, right? Don't have a great match. Kick his ass, Roman, and then he's a punk, right? Which I don't want to have happen because Buddy Murphy appears, by all appearances, to be awesome. But if you're going to have him have that fucking match, the worst he should do is run away, right? That's the worst scenario he could be in, is where he runs away. That's the worst acceptable scenario, let me say. The worst scenario is the one they did, where he got punked out. But maybe he runs away because he's outnumbered. I think we can accept that. Or maybe he stands up and is brave and takes the beating like a man and says, I will not lie for you. Or he fights back. There's so many other options that would build this character. And it shows you, again, that there was maybe no communication between the people putting on the match and the people presenting the backstage angles, and also indicates that as great as it was, and as great as Buddy Murphy appears to be, I don't think we have a chance. It's just a guess from one fan to another on Total Engagement. Buddy Murphy, you fucking kicked ass. Orange Cassidy. So, I talked about Orange Cassidy a few months ago. When I first saw him at WrestleCon, I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? What the fuck am I watching? And why do I love it so much? I really enjoyed what I saw. I'd never seen a shtick before. I'd never seen the Orange Cassidy experience. And I was completely, completely impressed by it. One thing that impresses me about his gimmick, as well as Joey Ryan's gimmick, and I think it's something that needs to be said, is that these are guys who figured out how to do the wrestling thing without doing a tremendous amount of bumps, without taking a tremendous amount of risk. And I guarantee some people would object a whole bunch less if these were guys who were taking a lot of high-risk stuff all the time and letting danger be their middle name and putting their bodies in harm's way more than they do now. Not that they don't now, but they are able to do so less because of these quote-unquote comedy gimmicks. So let's explore it just a little bit and try to get a final word on it. What people really hate about it is that they feel it takes them out of wrestling. It's not realistic. It's not realistic like, you know, when I was a kid and Samoans would headbutt people and it wouldn't hurt them, but it would hurt other people. Or when Hulk Hogan got hit enough where he just started shaking and he would come back. Or the Atomic Drop. Or when people got thrown against ropes and the ropes propelled you back. Or, you know, Mr. Sacco, the People's Elbow. The Undertaker's dead all the time. The Undertaker's dead all the time, and he summons lightning. Papa Shango, how about that? I mean, Was that realistic? So my point is with this, if anybody's saying it's not realistic, they're full of shit. It's not because unrealistic, it's because you don't like it. And if you don't like it, that's perfectly fine. But pretending like there's this universal fucking point about wrestling being realistic is total and utter bullshit. It's bullshit. It's the parents of kids listening to the Beatles coming downstairs and saying, what the fuck is this shit? I don't understand it. Elvis ruled. This stuff sucks. That's what it is, guys. Some times we get old. I get old. Everybody's old. I'm old enough to remember fucking Bob Backlund, so I'm old, okay? But I work with music, and I understand that there's a generational thing that happens. And it's okay to not get it. It's okay to not be into it. But to pretend that it's anything but that is stupid lame. Just absolutely stupid lame. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, I don't remember when I believed that wrestling was not a worked environment. I don't ever remember that time. I don't remember discovering wrestling wasn't legit or whatever you want to call it, because I always assumed it was what it was. And I think most people do. So if you're saying, oh, it takes me out, it takes me out of the moment, well, that's okay, but you're making a choice. You're making a choice to believe the Undertaker's fucking dead. But you have a problem with Orange Cassidy and Joey Ryan because of some misguided notion of the purity of this thing that you aren't really pure about because you believe a bunch of shit that makes no sense either. It's very hypocritical. The other side of this is the AEW component. The fact that when AEW signed Orange Cassidy, people objected to it, and Cody answered some tweets saying, hey, Cody, I thought you were about wins and losses. And Cody's like, yeah, but like, you know, we have different people and different kinds of people. And the point with that is people hold AEW under such a fucking magnifying glass, under such scrutiny. It's amazing, you know, people going, I thought you wanted wins and losses. Guys, there's a fucking dinosaur that wrestles for AEW. A dinosaur. His gimmick is he's a dinosaur. Of course, we know, a lot of us know that he's a guy who maybe had a little controversy that wasn't his fault back in his developmental days, and also was on Big Brother, but we also know that he plays a dinosaur. If we look up Undertaker and Kane, we can look up the fact that they're not actually brothers. We can find that out, and we all pretty much know that. I went back to the Undertaker for no reason, just because I think it's a fucking solid point. However, AEW, why are you holding AEW to this magnifying glass standard because they said wins and losses shouldn't matter? When they say wins and losses shouldn't matter, guys, people are obsessing about that a little too much. What they're saying is that wins and losses should matter more than they do now, meaning we always get frustrated about the 50-50 booking. We get frustrated that, you know, Ray loses and then Ray loses, Mysterio loses on Raw and loses again and he gets a title shot. The wins and losses don't mean anything at all. They're not saying that it's wins and losses and that's all. They're saying that wins and losses matter. They matter. They're relevant. Like they should be. Like they always were in all the wrestling we always liked. But yet, because it's AEW, people holding a magnifying glass. And Cody, I'm really worried about AEW. If you sign Orange Cassidy, there's a dinosaur there. There's a dinosaur wrestling. And he's good. So I think he's back just a little bit. As far as how to approach Orange Cassidy, I heard even Dave Meltzer talking about how he's like, I don't know. I don't know how this works. I'm not sure if it's a good idea, if he's front center. Guys, here's the way it should work, and here's the way it probably will work. Because one thing about these AEW guys I know is they kind of know what the hell they're doing. For anybody who thinks I have a bias towards AEW, I have seen these guys work. I don't have really a first name relationship with anybody, but I've just seen them work. And as someone who bet on myself with my own business, I admire people that fucking gamble and work hard and bet on themselves and work really hard and have a vision, have a different way of doing things. I think it's great. And I'm always going to root for people like that. And when I see how competent they are at what they do and how their ideas work and how they resonate with people like my son and young people that I've seen enjoy it, I'm going to say, hey, this shit might catch on. And if you might be so misguided as to say I have a bias or I'm pro AEW, you would be wrong. But those of you who understand what I'm saying, the rational, normal wrestling fans, I totally appreciate that. But back to Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy has a couple things he does, right? He's got the thing where, you know, he's Orange Cassidy, puts his hand in his pocket. There's a thing where he sleeps in the ring. There's a few other fun things that I've seen him do. It's not just one match. There's a few different things, and he keeps evolving it. He keeps changing it. In the time he's with AEW, he's going to evolve it and change it some more anyway. But let's say Orange Cassidy shows up backstage. He just has a vignette or two. They go, who the fuck is that guy? Because they're going to the TNT audience. So I think going to the TNT audience, there's a lot of people who haven't seen him. Who the hell is that guy? He's going to be funny. He's going to be funny. It's going to be interesting. But don't have him go out and do a spiel yet. Don't have him go out and do a match. Have a build-up, you know, week after week of you seeing more and more. And then eventually he gets out of the ring and you see the shit. And the fans are going to go crazy. And this can take place over a long period of time. And then another long period of time could take place between his next pay-per-view match. I don't think you have him do squash matches or expose this gimmick. You know, my friend Dan with Leather by Dan, which he's the finest belt maker around. He's fantastic. But he was saying how comedy gimmicks don't have much of a shelf life. I think when they're used improperly, anything doesn't have much of a shelf life. If it's used smart, that wasn't even a good sentence. If it's used intelligently, and if it's used in a prudent and tempered way, it could be a long-standing gimmick that grows and grows and grows and grows. I'm telling you, I saw him bring a house down of like 2,000 people. I saw him bring the house down with what he did, and it's very hard when you go to a lot of indie shows. When you've been to a few indie shows, a lot of times it's a lot of silence and a lot of claps on the big moves. This guy was pretty electric. If you haven't seen him, you should check him out on YouTube. If you don't think he's a real wrestler, you should check him out on YouTube. That's my take on Orange Cassidy. I think people, number one, need to fucking relax and realize it's just their own bias working against them. They accept Hulking up, but they don't accept Orange Cassidy. Cool. But there's nothing that says anything about the downfall of wrestling or anything like that. And secondly, AEW can sign whoever they want, and they're smart to sign the guy. He's one of the hottest, if not the hottest, free agent available. Why wouldn't they sign him? And lastly, guys, it's just fucking wrestling. It's just wrestling. In this wrestling renaissance of my 40s, I've discovered a lot of wrestling that I did not discover before. That doesn't make any sense. Let me say that again. In this wrestling renaissance that has taken place in my 40s, I have discovered a lot of wrestling that I wouldn't have been open to before, wouldn't have liked before, wouldn't have known about before. Of course, as a young man, I enjoyed nobody enjoyed the AWA, the NWA, and World Class, and of course, WWF. And as I got older, I experienced the Monday Night Wars, and now we're in this kind of wrestling renaissance, not just for myself, but for everybody. Now, it is true, wrestling is starting to splinter off a little bit and grow these effective little pockets in these indie areas. Now, is this huge audience there yet? No, it's not there yet. But I see every indication that it's going to grow. And one way you can tell it's going to grow are these companies that have these self-sustaining models that are working and are successful for themselves. For instance, MLW. MLW is not just the home of this podcast, but is a good wrestling organization with a good television show and is doing some really good things. And since Court brought them back, they've been going strong, even though their talent a lot of times seems to come in and then as soon as Court features them, they go somewhere else. So it's a hard business, right? Because you have to deal with, you know, a lot of wrestlers either up and coming or wrestlers who are on their way out or take chances on people you don't know. And it's an easy business to lose money. That's why we hear about so many wrestling companies going under. We hear about so many scams taking place. We hear about so many shows that don't actually happen or guys that no show. But there are some companies out there that have been successful, especially recently. If you look up North, if you're looking at a map, let's say Northeast Wrestling, they kind of do a show every month. They have some really good local talent, including my friend The King, who's up there. Not Jerry Lawler, but the real King. Who's up there, but they bring in a lot of big name talent and they temper that with the local talent and they have signings and they've made a success of it up there. They have some huge shows. There's going to be one this weekend. Defy Wrestling out west with my old friend Matt Farmer from the Dutch Mantel show has a strategy that's similar but also not similar. in that he uses a lot of hot up-and-coming stars. He gets some New Japan guys. He gets guys like the Lucha Brothers, the Elite will come by, and he gets a lot of the indie stars of today. They won't have a Ryback out there like a Northeast Wrestling would have, but they'll have a Pentagon, if you know what I'm saying. And they run very successful shows and have for a while. So those are some organizations I want to talk about. But there's one organization you need to know about, because this organization is a difference maker. I remember when I started my business, I remember reading a sentence that made a lot of sense to me. It was about creating a differentiation between you and other brands that the marketplace can appreciate. So in other words, you want to be different in a way where people want to spend money on your shit instead of other people's shit, if that makes sense. And this organization is Game Changer Wrestling, GCW. They are very different, very grassroots, very underground, very indie. And not only that, they embrace the indie. They embrace the indie style, and they also have embraced backyard wrestling, but they've created some really interesting things too. They do a fantastic job of promotion and marketing. I'm not the best businessman in the entire world. So when I started my business, I read as much as I could about it. And one thing I found out, one thing I read about, is that the quality of your product is irrelevant to the placement of your product in the marketplace. Meaning how good you are doesn't mean how successful you are. It's not even related. So when they test colas and they do taste tests versus popularity, there's no relation. When you do fast food, quality of food versus the amount of money the companies make, there's no relation. It's all about the marketing and promotion. That is really why successes happen. And whether or not you like GCW or not, their marketing and promotion is really great. They've created a differentiation, and they've created something a little bit different. Let me talk about it just a little bit. Number one, they've been intertwined with Joey Janela. I remember going to WrestleMania, I forget, 2017 maybe, where I saw the first flyers of Joey Janela Spring Break, and I'm like, who the fuck is Joey Janela? And by the way, we talk about companies putting on shows. I went to their Facebook page and looked up their old shows. They've got scores of shows. They've had scores of successful shows, and they're still around. They're owned by Brett Lauderdale, who's a former referee for CZW, and Nick Gage is kind of their main guy now, but they've been intertwined with Joey Janela, who's a great self-promoter, and he knows how to market himself. Again, it's irrelevant if you think he's a great wrestler or not a great wrestler. Dude knows how to promote himself. That's why Cody and the Bucks are where they are. They know how to promote and position themselves. But what Janela did with these spring breaks, and I'm not sure where Brett starts and where Janela begins, or where Janela starts and where Brett ends, or who's in charge. I don't know the ins and outs. I do know that PCO was nowhere before he came out of spring break. I know that nobody knew who Marco Stunt was. We had on our show, we interviewed him, and if you remember who Dustin is, Dustin is the wrestler who was in the Battle Royal for All Out, the Battle Royal for Double or Nothing, and he made a lot of news, and he recently got injured, so make sure you buy one of his t-shirts. Look up Dustin Thomas and get one of his t-shirts. But in other words, Marco, PCO, Dustin, he's breaking out people, probably would not have had any opportunity if not for GCW. Started something called Bloodsport, which is an entirely different kind of format. And Bloodsport was seen as one of the better shows of WrestleMania weekend, one of the more successful shows on Fight TV, and they're having Bloodsport 2 coming up as well. So with all the stuff that GCW is doing, you can't ignore them. They're disrupting the marketplace by looking grassroots. They look very indie. They're rocking these interesting matches with high-flying guys like Tony Deppen. They've got a lot of great wrestlers. Mance Warner is a great wrestler, and you're going to hear more and more from him, but he's a GCW guy. And you've got, of course, Invisible Man, Invisible Stan, who are some of Jim Cornette's favorite wrestlers. If you look up on Twitter or just Google Jim Cornette and the Invisible Man, he does not like the Invisible Man very much, even though the Invisible Man is not real. But the big star is Nick Gage. Now, Nick Gage is a guy who the reputation is that he's done a little time, and the reputation is that he's a legit, you know, badass for real, and the reputation is that he may have caused David Arquette to bleed quite severely in the ring, that caused the match to end. I will say that I had the opportunity to drive Nick Gage and drive Brett, the owner of GCW, and also Dustin Thomas. And Nick Gage is a scary motherfucker. I'm just saying. Like, you know, some wrestlers you just don't want to fuck with. Nick Gage is that wrestler. He's the badass who's the big star in the company now. And he's got a credibility. He's got a great look. He's got a really good persona. He's got everything you really need to be successful in the wrestling business. And so let's take a look at what GCW has. They have an ardent fan base. They do well on Fight TV. They have different kind of ideas like Bloodsport. They throw homage to concepts that old wrestling fans remember, like backyard wrestling. They have new stars like Nick Gage and Tony Deppen, and they have their own look. They have their own visual. It sounds kind of familiar. Sounds a little bit like ECW. I would be very, very surprised if GCW does not get a bigger stronghold in the wrestling business in the next couple of years. And I saw in the Wrestling Observer, as I was trying to do research on them, that they were listed as the 10th most popular company by Observer readers, so they're starting to get some attention. I would not sleep on GCW. Matter of fact, I'd bet on GCW, and I would bet on Total Engagement. I might drop another show this week. We'll see, but I appreciate you listening. We talk a little bit about Roman. We talk a little bit about GCW, and of course, we talked about Orange Cassidy, and I'm talking about seeing you next time and maybe doing a little bit longer show, and we might get an interview with someone that we talked about today. Soon on Total Engagement with Matt Cooper.